Welcome to Mindful Living with me, your host, Athea Davis, where I help you thrive, shine, and feel fully alive in all aspects of your life. It's equal parts informative, insightful, and inspiring. My guests and I share information and perspectives on a wide variety of topics to help you awaken and simply be and become a more aware and connected human aligned to their greatest truths, values, and potential. Remember, the world needs your unique spark in action. So, let's breathe deep, shine bright, and light up the world a few shades brighter. Hey there, and welcome to episode 146 here on Mindful Living with Athea Davis, Breathe for Change, with my special guest today, Ilana Nankin. Dr. Ilana Nankin, she's the founder and CEO of the organization Breathe for Change. She's an award-winning entrepreneur, teacher educator, and former public school teacher committed to using wellness as a vehicle for healing and social change. Ilana earned degrees in both psychology and education at UC Berkeley and received her PhD in curriculum and instruction at University of Wisconsin. Her dissertation revealed a critical connection between educator well-being and student learning, and the positive impact that wellness and social-emotional learning can have on teachers' and students' lives. Inspired by her research, Ilana founded Breathe for Change, a movement on a mission to enhance the health and well-being of educators, students, and entire communities. Breathe for Change offers the world's only 200-hour mindfulness, SEL, and yoga teacher training, specifically for educators, and provides wellness and SEL professional development for schools, districts, and organizations. I do hope you enjoy my chat with Ilana Nankin here on episode 146 of Mindful Living with Athea Davis. I will see you on the flip side. Well, I want to welcome you, Ilana, to Mindful Living with Athea Davis. So excited to have you on the show today.
So excited to be here and have this amazing conversation.
Yes, I know quite a few educators that have been through the Breathe for Change training programs. Many of them are members of the Coalition for Schools Educating Mindfully, and some I personally know, and you guys are doing some great work out there. So before we dive into that, I want to hear a little bit about how you came into the work that you do with Breathe for Change. What was the spark? Yeah. What was the catalyst?
Oh, I love this. Yeah, so Breathe for Change really started with my own experience as a pre-K teacher. So after graduating from UC Berkeley, I taught pre-K in a Spanish dual immersion school in San Francisco Unified School District. And when I was teaching, I was stressed and overwhelmed and overworked, like most of us are as educators. And that's when I first found yoga and these mindful practices. And it just completely transformed my life and my well-being, so much so that I started naturally integrating so many of these practices into my classroom with my kids and just saw extraordinary transformations in them, both social, emotionally, but then also academically. And I was like, wait a second, there is something going on here that needs to be further explored. So I ended up pursuing my PhD in curriculum and instruction and becoming a teacher educator at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And for my dissertation, I followed a bunch of educators that I had taught in the pre-service teaching program into diverse classrooms all over the country and world. And specifically, I was looking at how they would take up their ideals of social justice and action in their teaching. And what I ended up finding was that across the board, these educators, similar to my own experience in the classroom, were so stressed, they were overwhelmed, they were burning out really quickly. And this was pre-pandemic, so it's only gotten worse, you know, at a national and international scale since. And that negative cycle of well-being was deeply impacting their teaching and their ability to really fulfill on the social emotional needs of their students and to support those needs. And so as I was seeing how universal the issue of educator stress and burnout was through my research, and I knew it through my own experience, I simultaneously had just graduated from my 200-hour yoga teacher certification, which I chose to pursue because of how powerful the practice was for me personally. And the educators that I was teaching in the teacher ed program found out that I was a yoga teacher. They thought it was like the coolest thing in the world. And so they went behind my back and they rented out space in the student union on Monday afternoon, in addition to my Thursday courses that I taught them in education. And they were like, Ilana, we want you to teach us yoga. And so I was like, okay. And I was all nervous. It was my first yoga class that I'd ever taught since since graduating my certification program. And so I would teach these teachers yoga and meditation, these mindfulness practices and breathing techniques. And day after day, these teachers who were my class, who were also working in schools, would come up to me and say things like, oh my gosh, Ilana, the kids who normally have anxiety attacks before tests are utilizing these breathing techniques that you taught us, and their test scores are improving. Or, students who are experiencing so much trauma in the home are learning how to breathe and move and regulate their bodies, and everything is getting better. And so I was like, okay, wow. I see how universal the issue of educator stress and burnout is. And I also see how powerful these wellness and mindfulness and social emotional learning practices can truly be for both educators and students' lives. Like, nothing's going to stop me. I'm starting a movement. It is going to enhance the health and well-being of our amazing educators, students, and entire school communities. And that's when Breathe for Change was born. And that was, it's so wild to think. It's like over 8.5 years ago, end of 2014, early 2015, that this happened. And the first thing I set out to do, which is wild to think about now, is I didn't want to start like a 1 hour or 2 hour PD because I don't believe that true life-changing transformation can happen in such a short amount of time. So it's like, I'm going to start the world's only 200-hour mindfulness, social emotional learning, and yoga teacher training that's specifically for educators. So, in the yoga world specifically, you have to get your 200-hour certification to become a yoga teacher. So that's why it's 200 hours. But I wanted to have this training not just be about the practice of yoga, but the yoga meets social emotional learning, meets trauma-informed practice, meets mindfulness and equity work, and all the things that we as educators care about as experts of pedagogy and teaching and learning. So I tried to convince every educator that I knew to come to this 200-hour thing that had never existed before. And somehow 34 teachers thought it was an extraordinary idea and they came to Madison and it was absolutely life-changing. And at the that it was like an 18-day in-person training in the beginning. And these educators graduated, they went back to their schools and their districts and their organizations, and they started mindfulness programs and integrated SEL practices into all aspects of their instruction. And they were leading, wellness PD and SEL PD and wellness nights for their educators and starting yoga clubs for the kids. I mean, you name it, and they were doing it. And so I was like, all right, the impact is happening. I see the ripple effects. Like, let's grow this thing. And so the next year, we expanded to the Bay Area, where I'm from, and New York City. And Sesame Street hosted us in New York. So when Elmo and Big Bird came, I was like, we are on to something. Like, they're here, keep going. So we certified 185 educators through our 200-hour training across three cities that second year, and then 600 across six cities, and then 1,100 across 11 cities. And then when the pandemic hit, which we all remember that, that was. We were like, we had hundreds of educators in our school year trainings, and we decided very quickly to take those educators into, the online space so that they could have that sense of community and connection and complete their training in such an isolating, scary time. And at the same time, we interviewed hundreds of educators and leaders and basically said, like, what do you need and how can we help? And what we realized was that, you know, our 200-hour mindfulness SEL and yoga teacher training that we had developed over the years was really addressing two of the most critical issues in education, which is, you know, educator well-being, stress, retention, all the things related to educators' sustainability in their jobs, and then also student social emotional learning and mental health. So we were like, all right, we are going to do everything we can to make this training as accessible to every educator everywhere as possible. And since then, so our training is now a combination of the most interactive, inspiring, engaging, community-based live sessions on Zoom and on-demand self-paced content where that's more direct instruction, where teachers are really learning these tools and techniques that they can bring back to their classrooms and their school communities. And so it is magical. We've graduated well over 10,000 educators now through our 200-hour training. And since the pandemic happened, we've also really started to prioritize partnerships with schools and districts. Because we recognize that, you know, individual educators need this, they desire this so badly, but if we don't have our school leaders and our administrators on board and entire schools getting access to these healing modalities and practices, then, you know, we're not going to ultimately see the change we wish to see in our education system. And so now we have, like, you know, the go direct to educators. So educators everywhere who are leaders and really want access to our trainings have access to the 200-hour, but we've also launched like our mindful classroom management course for entire schools and districts, which is amazing. We lead professional development in person, you know, around topics like educator well-being or social emotional learning or mindful classroom management or trauma-informed teaching. And we have like a whole resource library that we offer schools and districts with like lesson plans and videos that are really easily accessible so that teachers everywhere can integrate these mindful practices into, you know, not just their classrooms, but staff meetings and family nights and all the things. So
in all the places and spaces that you guys are
everywhere, just bring it everywhere. Exactly. So it's been so inspiring to see the movement just grow and the community to, you know, form so powerfully. I mean, the tens of thousands of educators that are involved and the millions of students who have been impacted. It's a profound, inspired, passionate community of people that continue to build relationships and collaborate. And we've seen our graduates just have so many opportunities in their career. Like, educators are getting promoted to, like, you know, SEL coordinators and leadership positions, and they're leading things all over. So it's really amazing.
I want to kind of pause because there was a lot that was said, and kind of rewind a little bit and then dig into some of the things that you shared. If we can just rewind back to that point that you shared earlier, when you started taking on these practices and you were sharing them with your own students, what were some of the things that you were doing?
So, you know, I would, you know, my students would come into morning circle and I'd be like, let's take three collective breaths together before we dive into learning. And I'd like, take a deep breath in, deep breath out, you know, inhale, exhale, breathe in out with a huge sigh. And they loved it. And all of a sudden I was noticing, you know, little squirmy wormies that were all over the place were so relaxed. They were calm. They were ready for learning. Like, oh, this is interesting. And when I noticed my students were like feeling tired or, you know, down or seemingly disengaged, I would do some mindful movement. I'd have them, you know, breathing and moving their bodies and doing different poses or community building activities where they're like, you know, doing some mindful movement together, and all of a sudden they'd be more energized and focused. And I was like, wow. So I would integrate it in so many different ways, like both responsively and proactively. What I mean by responsively is I would use them in response to stressful moments. So like, let's say, one student is really upset because another student took their paper, something minor, but
A
to them,
common
it was a
tragedy.
huge deal, right? It's a big deal. So, I set up a peace corner in my classroom. I taught them what I call, like to call at least in Brief or Change, the peace process, which is built on Marshall Rosenberg's powerful practice of nonviolent communication. So I would model for them how to communicate about what happened, what their feelings were, what their needs are, and like what requests they have. And they would go into the peace corner and start solving their problems together.
I
And
love that.
things like that. And that like within 1 month or 2 months after modeling how to engage in the peace process, all of a sudden there was no tattling in my school, in my classroom. There was no like whenever students had something challenging, they would bring each other to the peace corner, and all I would ever witness is, "Why don't we solve our problem? He's going to get 3 beers, and I'm going to get two, and then we're going to switch tomorrow." And I was like, "This is the best thing ever! Like my students are now equipped to solve challenges on their own."
Yeah, that's
So a lot of
great.
this,
I'm sorry. I was just because you said something super important about how kids were, your students were taking this on themselves. You modeled for quite some time, and then they started showing the skills and competencies, such as the problem solving that you were teaching in modeling in this peace corner and a peace process that you were teaching them. I'm sure that you've encountered other teachers pushing back, like, how's that possible? We handle it this way. I'm in this mindset. That's not going to work. How in that context, when you were discovering that these practices were working and your students were showing growth, when you met that other kind of mindset that was pushing back against what was possible in your classroom with these practices and what was actually happening, how would you share that with others that weren't quite as invested or really understood that this is something that can happen in your classroom with your kids at any age?
Yeah, so I just shared with you about my experience in the pre-K classroom, but that's where it started. But I've done this in elementary, middle school, high school, college level with adults of all ages. And the one of the I'm glad you asked this question because one of the biggest concerns I get from the educators that I've trained, tens of thousands of educators I trained in the 200-hour training plus all the PDs I've led. I mean, everyone's like, well, what if, there's resistance or like they don't buy in? And I actually led a webinar about this exact topic last night. There are so many different ways to address that. And at Brief for Change, we tag on the F to SEL. So our social emotional learning curriculum spells self because I believe it's so critically important for us as educators, as I was speaking to embody the practices and the tools and the approaches that we hope to teach our kids and the social emotional learning competencies of self-awareness, self-management, relationship skills, social awareness and responsible decision-making laid out by Castle. We have to practice what we preach. And if our students are seeing us living and breathing these competencies and these ways of being as an educator in our classroom in relationship to them, they're going to pick it up and they're going to be way more likely to engage in that. I mean, that's like mirror neurons at work, right? When we're showing up as kind and compassionate and empathetic and modeling self-regulation and self-management when we're stressed in the moment, then our students are going to be more empathetic and compassionate and loving versus if we're stressed, we're overwhelmed. Someone in my dissertation said, when I am stressed, my students are stressed. When I'm calm and collected, my students are calm and collected. And so the first piece is literally your own embodiment. Are you telling students what to do? Like, hey, take three collective breaths with me? Or are you saying, you know, I have been trying out these breathing practices and I've noticed for myself how amazing I feel after. I feel more focused, I feel more relaxed, and I would love for you to try it out with me and just experiment. What does this feel like for you? Right? Using invitational and permissions-based language. That's like a trauma-informed approach, which is how we approach everything at Breathe for Change. And some of the most important trauma-informed principles when utilizing these practices are like giving people choice or options. Like, I invite you to join me in three collective breaths. You can soften your gaze, or you can close your eyes, whatever feels most comfortable to you. So, really giving students options to kind of try it out in a way that feels good for them and not mandating or forcing that they engage in these practices. That's so key, because that's where resistance comes in. When people feel like they have to do something, they're being pulled to do something they don't feel comfortable with. And so, really, one, talking about the benefits that these practices have had on you. And your students aren't going to be inspired by you because you're their teacher. And so if they hear that, you know, this has changed your life in positive ways and you can tell them specifically how, then they'll be more likely to try it on. The other way, I mean, is especially with like middle school and high school students, where I often, you know, get the most. Yeah, I get the most educators who like perceive resistance at those ages, which makes a lot of sense. Like I'll be like, what do your students, who do your students love? Like, who do they admire? What do they care about? It's like, oh, they love this athlete, or they really love this musician. Well, like Google them, find out, like, do they practice yoga, or do they have a meditation practice or mindful movement? Or, and oftentimes you'll find that these people that your students look up to are also engaging in these practices. So another way to get buy-in is to be like, hey, you know, that basketball star that is incredible that you love, guess what? They engage in these mindfulness practices, and he even said that this is what makes him such a great basketball player. And then your students will be like, whoa, I want to try. You know, so there's a lot of different ways that you can creatively think about what's going to land for my students. There's you being authentic, sharing your own personal experience. There's you connecting the value of these practices to people or things that your students love. There's you kind of having it be more like a fun game experiment. So you're not being like, we have to do this, but like, hey, try it on, see how it feels. And one of the most important things that I always share with educators is these practices, whether breathing techniques or mindful movement or like focus strategies or community building practices or communication tools, like, you know, we teach all of it at Breathe for Change. The reflection after the practice is just as important as the practice itself. Because let's say you're doing belly breathing, and if you just do some belly breathing and then you move on to your math lesson or your science, you know, project or whatever you're teaching, then you're missing a huge moment of growth, which is, all right, now just take a moment, check in with yourself, notice how you feel. I'd love for you to share, you know, in one word, how you feel. And then students are like, focused, centered, relaxed, open, you know, whatever it is, right? Energized, present. And then in that reflective moment, you're literally building students' social emotional skills. Self-awareness is the primary social emotional learning competency. So simply by them like paying attention to how they feel, that's giving them skills of awareness, which is amazing, right? Oh, wow. And then it's also in doing this, you're also strengthening their self-management skills or your self-regulation skills, which is the second social emotional learning competency. Because if they realize, wow, I feel more focused and happy, present, healthy, whatever it is, Then later on, when they're feeling stressed or upset or frustrated or overwhelmed or whatever, in that moment of awareness, they can say, "Hey, I remember when I did that belly breathing. I felt focused and more centered. So let me do that right now." Instead of spiraling out of, in a way that's not supporting them based on whatever emotional experience they're having. So they can draw on these as tools when they really need them. Simple, and that starts with you just being like, "How do you feel after the practice?" And having them share how they feel so they can hear, different perspectives. So I find that that's another way to increase buy-in, is for people to have that moment to explore the impact and then to
Yeah, I
share
love
it.
that noticing practice for sure. I think it's a really powerful one. And I think what you were saying earlier made me think of the power of one, in those instances where you might have another educator or a leader that's very resistant to whether this matters. What does it work? Is it, a silver bullet, the magic formula? There's all these things that may be brought up in conversation in terms of, I don't know if this is going to work for me. I tried it once, it didn't work. But, I often remind educators and leaders, parents, anybody working with young people, teaching them mindfulness-based social emotional learning practices, it's always about progress over perfection. And like you were saying, how you're embodying the work, I think that's one of the most important steps in the process when any class, when any school takes this on, is that they're investing in the development of their teachers to, in whatever way suits that particular school and community, to access these practices in a way that works for them.
Totally. Yeah, and I think it's definitely about the journey, not the destination, right? You're not going to see the long-term effects in a day of doing this. And so I think a lot of times I see educators getting, doubting themselves. Oh, well, I did it once and I didn't get this like major aha moment, like response to it, so maybe it's not right for my classroom. And I always think back to one of my first 34 educators that went through our 200-hour training. He was a middle school teacher, and he was working in a Title I school in San Francisco, and he basically was just like, "I don't think my students can do this. Like, I tried once. They were, yelling, screaming, distracted. I invited them to like, listen to a chime for a mindful moment and just to like sit in silence and just be practice mindfulness and connecting to their breath. And it was like not working." And then I challenged him. I said, "Look, I challenge you to do this consistently every single day for the next 2 months. And just to see what happens, right? As an experiment. Because people have the opportunity to change, right? And like with this is a practice. It's not a perfect, right? It's not an end game. And you see the benefits over time." And so he kept doing it. He'd start with like this little chime where they'd like mindfully listen to the chime, and then he basically he did it so that they would do practice mindfulness until, there was noise that broke out in the classroom. And so at first it lasted like 1 second every day, but after reaching out to him in 2 months later, he said, "You won't believe it. My students are now at 11 minutes. I ring the chime and they're literally breathing, connecting to their breath. They've done 11 minutes and I only have a 50-minute period, middle school." And he's like, "The wild part is that's over 20% of my instructional time And my kids' scores on the tests are over 11% higher than anyone else teaching the same thing at the same grade level. And it's way higher than what my scores were last year. And I attribute it to how focused they are during their time because of how mindful they became in those moments. And I was like blown away, right? And
That's awesome.
so that's like for those of you who are feeling, oh gosh, like it's never gonna work. It takes practice and it takes consistency, and also you don't need 11 minutes. Like three collective breaths takes 10, 15 seconds at the most, and it can make a profound difference from a transition from one thing to the next to settle your students in. Or maybe you start class with a two-word check-in and you just say like, hey, let's take a moment to connect with ourselves, settle in, find a comfortable seat, connect to your breath, and just notice how you feel right now. Choose two words to describe how you're feeling, and then they share their two words. And then, as an educator, you're way more equipped to respond to what's needed in the space. I mean, there's so many ways, and we go way deeper into all these practices in our training. But start small and simple.
I want to take a moment to pivot from the impact these practices are having, and even the resistance that others leading these practices in their schools might receive from other educators or leaders that have not had experiences with these types of practices. So the pivot I want to take is to talk a little bit about what you mentioned earlier in the beginning when you were sharing part of your journey and inserting Breathe for Change and the big growth that you guys have had are career opportunities that educators have access to, or that you're seeing that they have access to by going to trainings, just some things that maybe didn't exist even a decade ago. What are you noticing out in the educational space and some of the educators that are taking your programs? What are they able to do with the skills that they're learning from your programs and doing at their schools?
So many inspiring things. So I could go on forever. It's interesting. Since we started this, we've seen more and more of our graduates get promoted to positions that didn't even exist, right? They were created for them, like mindfulness director or SEL coordinator, or they're like the professional development wellness lead, or they're being promoted to these positions, either in addition to their classroom role, like a leadership position in addition to their, classroom teaching role. Or, I mean, honestly, we've even seen people go from classroom teacher to, school administrator, and then, principal, literally because of the impact that they made at the school level as a teacher. They came in. They learn these skills, and it's really a leadership training. So at the end of the day, they really hone their leadership skills. They went back, they were leading, wellness classes each week for their staff, and they were seeing improvements in staff well-being, and they were leading professional development for their district. And then their school leaders were like, wow, this person is incredible. And then, they're getting, they're putting videos out on YouTube, and the whole school is like, being guided through mindfulness practices from them. And so, I mean, you see all these things, and then all of a sudden it's leading to new career pathways. So, I've seen everything. It's now that we've had 8.5 years since the initial cohorts graduated, I have seen people go from classroom teacher to stay as a classroom teacher, but just literally like the professional development lead of their whole district, to classroom educators becoming superintendents of social emotional learning, or SEL, like or superintendent of like culture and climate. Lots of those now. We've seen people who come in as principals, school principals, start entire school-wide wellness programs, and every single educator has like gone through Brief for Change PD, and they're implementing all these practices in every classroom in their school, and it is magic to see what is happening when like a school leader is deeply, deeply committed to this work of wellness and SEL. And now that's why we're so committed to intentionally building these partnerships with schools and districts, because we know the impact of what happens. A lot of our grads have, they take the training, it's life-changing for them. They go back to their schools, and then all the other educators who are like, engaging with them around the practices in some form, like, I want to take the training. And so the next year we have five other educators from their school take the training. And then the next year there's like half our staff has taken our training. So we've also seen like that level of sort of ripple effect happening. And then as more and more people take our training, that's just like a huge new skill set at the school and capacity to be able to implement these bigger wellness and SEL and mindfulness initiatives.
That's really awesome. I mean, it sounds like that many that have engaged with your programming have had a lot of great opportunities to expand on educating, our students in, you under with this whole child philosophy and perspective. And I see a huge, a huge shift, particularly post-COVID, which is a great, I think, if they're, a positive outcome of
It's about time, right?
Absolutely, to see this focus on it, on, making sure that we're educating the whole child and the whole teacher, the whole person, because at first it was, can we get these practices into our classrooms for students? Absolutely, because that's important to their whole success. But as you were talking about earlier with burnout and the stress, pre-COVID, but also post-COVID, that how much our teachers and leaders need these practices themselves for the whole person in the classroom and the ripple effect or the symbiotic relationship, that happens between, a teacher getting access and practicing these themselves and the students. We're really creating some high level, I believe, SEL skills, particularly adaptability, which is a skill that we definitely need in the world that we live in with the increase in AI, and just the amount of time that we spend on technology and understanding how to build healthy habits, in our lives with all this information coming our way. There's just so much to navigate, and it can be really stressful. So to see this happening, I agree, it is a beautiful thing. And to see teachers having these opportunities and career changes is really awesome. You often hear about budget cuts across schools, and it's nice to hear, you share some stories that there are schools that are investing in this even as we speak today. It's not something that just came from, 1 year post-COVID. There are still, schools investing heavily in these and these practices and this type of education for their students and for their staff at their schools.
Totally. I love when you talk about the whole child. One of my favorite lines from my own dissertation was, we have to start prioritizing the whole in every student and teacher as opposed to just the holes that students fill out with their number two pencils on standardized tests.
Yes,
I just
absolutely.
think it's like so important. And another thing that I think really helps drive the interest and buy-in of educator leaders and just really anyone is the research. I mean, there's just so much research out there, including my own, that demonstrates if you engage in these practices, you will see enhancements in mental, physical, social, emotional well-being, in academic outcomes. You'll see reductions in detention and suspensions, and you'll see improvements in graduation rates. I mean, it's all there. And so when I hear people feeling like a certain resistance around any of this. I love to just draw on. Well, the research shows that, engaging in this work and really committing to SEL and wellness will lead to these outcomes. And everyone can align on the outcomes, right? We all want our students to thrive in school. We all want our educators to stay in the classroom. We all want our students to graduate and be able to be successful in life. I mean, that's what these practices do. So I think grounding it in data can be another great way to help anyone who cares about this work, who's committed, get other people to understand the potential benefits.
Yeah, I agree. I'm always looking for, new research coming to the surface. There was something recently, I believe, Branching Minds did some research, and it was quoted in Education Week that students that engaged in SEL practices in the classroom had higher reading and math scores, compared to those students that did not engage. So it's just nice to have those little pieces of information to share with others that are, a little ambivalent, or a little resistant to perhaps just a new way of doing things, right? Because for many leaders and educators, this is still a very new way of doing schooling and doing education. Yes.
Totally. And
And I wanted to say, and that being said, how would one, if you were to give like one or two pointers to someone wanting to have a conversation with a leader on their campus and bringing this, a small a PD, a training, bringing up a conversation about maybe having a leadership role or a hybrid role, or how could they start implementing SEL practices on their campus if they aren't already, or expanding them? What are a couple of pointers you could give those listening, particularly educators that want to make or would like to expand, in their career, particularly with these practices?
Great question. I think the number one thing you need to start with is alignment. Like, what is, like, really getting to the heart of understanding what your school leader or district leader's goals are and vision is for the school, which is probably has something to do with like academic outcomes and, how they want to build a culture at your school or whatever the goals are. Once they feel they've had the space to share that with you, then you can say, I truly believe wholeheartedly, based on my own experience, my practice, my teaching, that prioritizing social emotional learning and wellness as like a pillar to help us get will help us achieve what your goals are for our school. And so if you can speak their language and connect it to the outcomes that school leaders are, trying to achieve day in, day out, and the hard work that they're doing to, like, build a school, then I think they're gonna be more likely to listen. And I think, like you said earlier, a lot more schools and districts and our system is recognizing the importance and critical need to invest in wellness and SEL. I mean, you hear it all over the place. And even though there's resistance around even the term social emotional learning, it's being, recrafted in certain states as something else. But like everyone has some sort of form of social emotional learning as like top of mind priority because of the trauma their students have experienced, the mental health issues that are arising, the behavioral challenges that they're seeing in the classroom. And so if you're able to present, what you have to offer, whether it's these like a few social emotional learning strategies, or you've gone through our training and you're like, now I'm completely equipped as a leader and you're positioned to be able to really execute on an implementation plan. School-wide, wherever you're at in the spectrum, or you're like, hey, I want to do this 200-hour training, it's going to equip me to help us achieve our goals in this way, like you being able to speak to the benefits of these practices in alignment with their goals, that's your key to success. Then they're like, oh, it's aligned to where we need to go. Like, that's what my professional development funds are for. Let me tap into those because it's going to help us reach our, targets as a school. If you're speaking at it outside of their already existing vision, it's going to be a lot harder to get the buy-in. But if you can really first listen to what the bigger vision is, which they've probably shared with you in some way, then I think they'll feel understood, they'll feel seen, they'll feel heard, and they'll feel like you're on their team. I'm trying to reach that outcome in collaboration with them, which is ultimately what you are doing.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And I love that word alignment. And I think that holds true too on connecting these practices with your students in the classroom is how can you get in alignment with what matters to them? As you were saying earlier, is there someone, a mentor they look up to, an athlete, a musician, just speaking their language? Because these kind of practices go across lines. They go across all, yeah, they
They
really
go
do.
across
So,
everything. And in our 200-hour training, we have like a whole section of our curriculum that's solely focused on how do you get your stakeholders on board to support wellness and SEL. And so we go through all these different strategies for how educators can approach the leaders who are making the decisions about what to prioritize and not. So that's definitely a part of becoming a leader of this work is knowing what levers to pull in different situations and contexts and how to communicate about the value of this work, so that people do get inspired to see and experience and commit to these practices.
Yes, it's 100%, and I love that you guys have that, that aspect in your training. It's a super important skill to have because it's one thing to know and share the practices with your students, but it's quite another skill to be able to communicate with the leadership on your campus or in your district on the why of these practices, especially when you're facing that resistance and the learning how to speak that same language of a shared value system and coming into alignment. It is definitely a different skill, and happy that you guys are teaching that to help educators, expand their ability and possibility in their classrooms, in their schools, and in their districts. Ilana, it's been so awesome to have you on the show. And we're going to wind down here in a moment. And I would love to take a moment to share or have you share thinking about a challenge in your journey. It could be either in this journey with Breathe, for Change or personal journey. Because oftentimes, I mean, we know that life is hard. We were just talking about pandemic and stress and, just the everyday doing of life can be so much. And I would love for you to share a challenge that you've had and a practice that you used or a tool that was really helpful to you during that challenge. So others that may be listening and that are going through their own challenge, can one just know that, hey, I'm not alone, and perhaps this is a tool they can put in their toolbox and get over that little hump that they're facing in life.
Totally. I think, I'm a new mom, so I have an almost 2-year-old and another baby on the way very soon, and balancing running an organization, my husband, working away and being a mom and an educator all at the same time. And I know that so many of us as educators have a million things to balance. I was I was realizing like slowly like the connection between my husband and I is like slowly diminishing because we just did not have the space to connect in the way that we used to with all the different things happening. And so what, and he's taken the training. He has also been on our team in the past, and so we decided like months and months ago that we were gonna embody what we teach. And so we now, every single morning, we wake up. And the first thing that we do before we get out of bed is we ask each other, like, what are your intentions for today? And so, and when I say intentions, like, how do you want to show up? So, like, this morning, my intentions were to be focused and inspired. And like, his were to be productive and present. And so every single morning, we always set our intentions. And that intention is like the anchor throughout our day that helps us stay on track with how we want to be. And it's been remarkable in terms of a lot, like I've felt less stressed throughout the day. When I'm feeling overwhelmed, I come back to my intention. And then now, and then we also close our day. The last thing we do before we go to bed is we say what we're grateful for from our day. And so now we just like relish in, we're like going to sleep, thinking about what we're grateful for and all the amazing things we have in our life and experiences that we've shared or like individually experienced. And it's so powerful. And so just starting the morning and ending our day in this intentional way has fundamentally changed, transformed our relationship for the better, brought us back to like, you know, the essence of love and connection that brought us together. But it also just makes working and momming and teaching and living so much more beautiful. So like, I would just think, you know, what are these little practices that you can do every single day? It's like building healthy habits. Whether it's waking up and doing three collective breaths before you get out of bed, or having a moment of mindful movement to yourself, or integrating, you know, affirmations or gratitude into your daily life, it can make a huge difference. And so that's where I would start.
Well, thank you. Those are, I think, two really powerful practices that I live by as well. So happy to hear that you and your partner are using those on a morning and nightly basis. Ilana, it's been awesome to have you on the show. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your insights, all the things that you're doing with Breathe for Change. Anything that you want to share about trainings coming up where listeners can connect to you on social media? Go ahead and
Yeah,
share all that
sure.
information.
So we have our so our 200-hour training. If you're interested in like developing your leadership skills and becoming a social emotional learning facilitator and yoga teacher, we have a 200-hour cohort starting at the end of September. We have another one starting in January and then in April. And so if you're interested at all in any of, and we do them over the summer. So if you're interested in even exploring at all that 200-hour training experience, then you can go to our website, fill out a really short application, and then schedule a call with one of our educator development advisors. We talk to every single educator who goes through our training first to make sure it's a good fit. You have all the resources that you need to do it. So that's one path that you can take. We also have like our mindful classroom management course and a chair yoga course available for people who are interested. And if you think that your school or district would be interested in partnering with Breathe for Change, bringing us in for professional development, or maybe sending groups of people to our training to enhance school-wide well-being, then you can also reach out to support@breatheforchange.com, and our team will direct you to the right people. And all this information is at you know, breatheforchange.com, our website. So go to our website. Also, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram and all the social media. If you just type in Breathe for Change, it should come up. And we're posting lots of really valuable content there. And we have free webinars every week that you can come to if you want to just get a taste. So there's so much out there. And I'm really, really excited to get to know you all and hopefully see you in some way, shape, or form. And good luck.
Thank you, Alana.
Good luck with this new school year. And I'm so excited to have this time to connect with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been an awesome time having you on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope today's episode brought you tons of value and made your day feel a little extra vibrant. Share it with your people and take a moment to subscribe to the show. And let's stay connected. You can follow me on social media at Athea Davis, A-T-H-E-A-D-A-V-I-S, at Athea Davis, or visit my website, atheadavis.com, to sign up for the A-List, my free mindful living monthly resource, keeping you in the know for all the things to help you grow and glow. And you can also learn more about my programs, books, and resources. Until next time, have an awesome sauce day in every way.